Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to today's broadcast of Firefly Willows LIVE. Our host this week is Mildred Lynn McDonald. Mildred Lynn will take you on a fascinating tour of the mind-body-spirit connection through a combination of healing conversations, hands-on personal growth tools, and a generous sprinkling of East Coast humor and warmth. Join her as she chats with Lynn Fang. Lynn is a conscious business coach, writer, and scientist who will share her personal journey into the world of sustainable living, organic farming, and social change. And with Dr. Glenna Calder, who returns for part two of our popular series, What's Your Prescription for Balance? Mildred Lynn will also speak with Shelley Monahan as she shares her travel tips, self-growth insights, and lighthearted commentary about her fabulous tango adventure in Argentina. And Mildred Lynn will moderate this week's Firefly Willows Roundtable with Heisey Lutmers and Firefly Willows founders, John and Deb Carosella. We're excited. Give us a listen. Firefly Willows LIVE, helping you find and shine your inner light. This week's roundtable topic is The Energy Worker's Dilemma, What's in a Name? Coming up next.
This is Mildred Lynn McDonald, and I'd like to start off our roundtable for the day by welcoming Deb Carosella, John Carosella, and Hi C.
Good morning. Hello.
Hi.
Hey. Yeah. Hi. Good to be here.
And I understand John has a little bit of news to share.
Well, I just want to say that it's really exciting to be recording this roundtable in our brand new, very intimate, good sound quality Studio C in Los Altos.
Sometimes energy workers feel uncomfortable describing or sharing what they do with other people, particularly at maybe dinner parties or just out and about. Sometimes they even have difficulty coming up with the correct words to capture their chosen vocation, or they may call it a profession or passion. How do you guys describe the energy work that you do, and how did you come up with the description? And I guess, most importantly, what guidance would you share with other people who are on the same path?
I think that's a really excellent question, because being relatively new to the whole experience, as far as having a lot of dealings with people who do energy work or this sort of readings and things like that, the nomenclature is extremely new to me. There are sometimes people will describe what they do, or they will use a phrase, and it's, oh, well, that's very interesting. I have no idea what that means or what that means to you versus someone else who has said that. You don't seem to do the same thing at all that so-and-so, who was in just the other day, said that they do. So I find it really relevant question.
So you would be able to relate to when I'm saying someone may describe what they're doing, and the person they're telling or sharing this to would look at them maybe with a glazed look over their eyes, wanting to converse and welcome the conversation, but not really sure where to go with it.
Exactly, yes.
So I think it's important when someone is thinking about what title they're going to give themselves to really think in terms of what would I or will I put on a business card that will give access to somebody who isn't familiar with this kind of work at least the ability to say, okay, I understand in a general sense what this person is about. If somebody is doing Pleiadian, light wave, something, something kind of work, that's going to be very esoteric and confusing to somebody. But if you just put energy worker, then at least the person can say, oh, okay, so that's somebody that does some sort of energy work. And even in a general sense, somebody probably goes, okay, I know that that's like they're going to put their hands on me or, you know, whatever it is that they do. But they immediately know that an energy worker is different than a psychic.
Mm-hmm.
And a psychic is different than a numerologist.
Right.
And that's how I took this question, is that's what makes it, one, more difficult for us, because we have to kind of distill it down to something that's a little more relatable for people.
Mm-hmm.
But two, it also is, it's hard because sometimes we work in very esoteric realms.
Yes.
And trying to get that across to people is sometimes a little bit difficult. But that's why we have to be perhaps a little flexible in how we term it, so that even though it's the term may not be exactly what we do, it's a bit more broad or general, it still is an entry point for the person who is completely lacking any knowledge of those kind of things to still say, oh, I've heard that term before. Energy worker, I've heard before. Tarot reader, I've heard before. Psychic, I've heard before.
Mm-hmm.
Then, when I contact them, I can find out specifically what it is that they do, or if what I'm wanting is something that they do or focus on, and that kind of thing.
So if you put energy worker on your card, might it also be useful to put some other little adjectives or some other descriptor next to it, so that, you know, your energy worker, light and angels, or something like that? I mean, I'm asking.
What do you put on your cards?
Well, initially I used Tarot Reader, mm-hmm. and that's very easy because people are very familiar with that. It did evolve a little bit, so now I call myself a Tarot Conversationalist
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
Ritualist. I often have to explain ritualist to people, but the Tarot part they can get. And just having the word Tarot is something
yeah.
that's familiar to people. So even if the rest of it's like, conversations, what in the world do they mean by that? I know what a Tarot reader is, but they still would go, oh, Tarot. So I know at least they work with the cards.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Tarot is very familiar. Conversationalist is a little bit of a spin.
Right.
And so it's intriguing enough to not be generic, but it's understandable enough to be familiar.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good.
You know, you
good
could
job.
Always create a little tagline kind of thing too that
right, that's
describes
kind of what I was thinking.
A little bit more general or specific to yourself. If you have particular guides that you work with, you could put that down as far
right.
as I do energy work, but I don't know if people channel or if whatever it is that they do, but they might may be able to say specifically with the angels or specifically
right.
with higher masters or
mm-hmm.
whatever.
I really like Debbie's point. I found myself in a situation where I was certified or trained to be one thing, one modularity, which is a life coach. A terrific skill set, lots of opportunity to work and empower people. I found that when I come to the table, I wasn't able to bring my whole self. I wasn't able to bring the intuitive aspect or maybe the counseling aspect or life experience aspect in order to be in integrity with the life coaching model. So like I see, I came up with a title that has the word conversationalist in it. So I call myself the generic part healing and the part that is more specific conversationalist, because I feel that really what I do when I'm talking to a person is I'm conversing, and it's an equal type of situation rather than anything else.
Mm.
So that's what I find works for me. Now, when I meet people and I say, hey, I'm a healing conversationalist, they go, hey, what does that mean? So what I do...
But they're not lost.
No, they're not lost. And for anybody who's struggling with this, who's listening here, what I simply did was it gives me an opportunity to explain what area of healing I'm in, which would be the generic part, and why I've chosen to express that healing through conversations. Yeah.
Like, I was very amused by your response to that, John.
because
I thought that your response would have been very simple. Because I would think that you would call yourself a shaman.
Well.
Or that you do shamanic work. And
right.
that's the tagline, or that's the easy-to-access title.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
all of the other parts.
And what I have on my card is shamanic practitioner. So I do shamanic healing and counseling. And that is probably enough.
Well, and that probably would make much more accessible sense to, say, someone like Deb
mm-hmm.
to hear that. But for me, the question was more about how do you introduce yourself to someone?
Yes.
And give that access point for people.
So somewhere in my subconscious, I actually knew that, and that's why that's what's on my business card.
So let's say someone's starting out. What guidance would you provide? Just a little tidbit that they could take away.
Right? It's like, try it out. Try out different ways of describing yourself from two perspectives. One, are you clear within yourself?
Mm-hmm.
When you say the words, do you know what you mean? And do you feel like that's the best you have? And then test it on people, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, test it on friends and family and anybody who will listen. Because it might take
yeah.
time, you know.
Right.
A lot of us are very right-brained folks, very artistic and all that. And so the analytical slice and dice, Cartesian, let's break the world down part doesn't flow very easily. But it's important to just keep working at it. And
mm-hmm.
I think that would be my advice. You know.
If I may ask you one other question, how long did it take you to center in on the title that you're using? Did it take years, weeks, months?
You know what? The shamanic practitioner was the title of First Resort.
Okay.
Right? I didn't actually have to think about it very much because I've been trained as a shamanic practitioner. Mm. So, like you, you were trained as a life coach, so your business card probably said life coach.
Oh, definitely.
Right? So, fortunately for me, shamanism is so broad, and that is one of the challenges about it. Shamanism is so broad as a practice that it doesn't say much more than I've been trained in shamanism.
Mm.
Right? So the particular things that I do can be very eclectic and so on and so forth. But maybe that doesn't matter as long as people, as I see saying, as long as they have something to reference.
A point of entry.
A point of entry, and then we can have the dialogue.
Okay.
I actually don't have a business card specific to energy work, unlike the three of my cohorts here. I don't feel that I have a thing. I am not a energy worker. I am a space holder. I seem to do that quite well.
I call that the big zero.
Yeah. He's such a flattering individual. What I seem to do is I seem to be able to hold space, and I seem to be able to create a bubble of welcome and comfort for individuals. And is there a name for that? I doubt it very much. It's like the bartender on, you know, your favorite.
Cheers.
Cheers. Not quite. Woody was a little odd.
I'm brighter than that.
I do like to think that I'm just a little quicker than Woody was. But
no offense, Woody.
You were fun. That I provide an easy, open, accepting space for people to feel comfortable and feel secure. But I don't have a business card for that.
All right. So if anybody out there has a potential name for Debbie, she's welcoming one and all.
That's
and
right.
What about you, Heisi? If someone from starting out, what would you share with them?
I think I would just say two things. First of all, to John's point, I think that not to get too left brain oriented, because what you said was you kind of immediately knew to use, it was just kind of there to use shamanic practitioner.
Yeah.
And I think that if somebody just sits and listens, they'll hear what they need to say or call themselves. And it may evolve over time and change, but not to overthink it and overanalyze it, trying to come up with the right name.
Mm-hmm.
And two, I would say you have to come to a point where you're willing to just be it in the world. And that's how people will start to know you. So, and you don't have to wait until you start doing the work full time to start using the term or the title. So let's say, I think of massage in this realm as well. Let's say that somebody is working as an engineer in a high-tech company, but they also want to now become a massage practitioner. Instead of whenever they're at a party, they introduce themselves as, oh, I work as an engineer at such and such company, and I also do massage on the side, let me give you my card. People aren't going to think of that later if they're thinking, oh, man, I really need a massage. What engineer do I know? I'm going to do that. But instead, start introducing yourself as, I'm a massage therapist. Right now, I'm still working as an engineer, but I'm moving towards doing massage full time. I think of it like actors. I mean, every waiter in Hollywood is an actor, and they don't say or introduce themselves as a waiter. They always say, I'm an actor. So you don't think of them as a waiter, you think of them as an actor. So you have to start introducing yourself as you want to be thought of, even before you're doing it full time, so you don't have to wait until then, because that will start to help generate energy and awareness and a way of people thinking about you in that way versus trying to get them to remember something else that you do in addition to something.
This is Mildred Lynn McDonald, and we'll be back again next week with another roundtable.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
In our next segment, we'll speak with Newfoundland's Shelley Monahan. She'll give us the highlights of her Argentina travel adventure, which, as it turns out, took her on an unexpected inner and outer journey. Please stay tuned.
Hello, this is Mildred Lynn McDonald, and welcome to Soul Nudge Creates interview series. Have you ever wondered what it would be like to step away from your life and jump into a new you? Half a world away? Shelley Monahan did it. Boarded a plane for Buenos Aires, Argentina, tango shoes in tow, and never looked back. Let's find out how Shelley found the courage to follow her heart, and perhaps she'll share with us a few fun life lessons that she's learned along the way. Shelley, welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Muchas gracias, Mildred. It's great to be here.
Muchas gracias means?
Thank you very much.
Ah, I'm liking it.
Now, Shelley, what would you say, let's imagine there's a fellow Newfoundlander, a lovely lady sitting in Newfoundland, on the rocky shores of Newfoundland, wanting to make a change in her life, to step out of her comfort zone, and this could be someone, anybody across Canada. What would you like to say to them?
Well, sister, if I can do it, you can do it. I think, Mildred, you have to realize I was a very structured person, black and white, patterned as pattern can be, stripes.
Like a zebra.
Like a zebra, exactly. And a couple of years ago, I would never have thought about like taking a year out of my life, a year out of my work plan, a year out of paying down on my house, to make the leap to another country without even knowing the language, without knowing I would make friends there or not. And I think I realized, you know, within a couple of months of my journey that the universe was there, and it supported me, and the experiences that I received just kept me moving from day to day, week to week.
I know our listeners would love to know, how does it feel to make this type of a choice?
It felt life-affirming.
Okay.
Because I was out there meeting people who were making changes in their lives as well. So we built a support network for each other.
Okay, now, Shelley, this is the other question I'm dying to ask. A lot of people, when they're living their lives, have what's called internal dialogue. Sometimes it's positive, like, oh, man, aren't I great? And sometimes it's negative or around the lines of, I'm not worthy, I don't deserve this, I'll never be able to do this. What messages did you tell yourself in the midst of this change?
I think I told myself before leaving on that 13-hour flight that it was time to do it. If not now, when? And that I absolutely deserved it. It was something that that was on my life path.
And how many times did you have to repeat that to yourself?
Many. And you know something? It wasn't just me, Mildred. I had close friends telling me, actually pushing me on that plane that day.
Now, Shelley, in order to step away from your life in Canada and go to Argentina, you would be shifting on all cylinders, mind, body, spirit, emotion, and dream. What many people don't realize is when you're shifting, there's a tendency to close yourself off until you reach higher ground. Now, from my understanding, when you went to Argentina, you went with open arms. Can you share with people how that impacted the people you attracted and the events you attracted into your life?
I sure can. I arrived back in Canada, and I still wanted to keep that spirit of Argentina alive because I knew I would be going back. I knew in my heart I would be going back. And living in Ottawa, Ottawa's pretty close to Montreal. Found out that Montreal is actually one of the tango capitals of North America.
Oh, my heavens.
Mm-hmm.
Olé.
Olé. So it was nothing to jump into the car for a weekend trip to Montreal. So I did that a couple of times to get into the swing of things and to learn some more tango there.
And when you were down there, Shelley, you were sharing with me earlier, and I know people want to hear about this, you actually learned how to speak Argentine Spanish, and you took cooking courses and wine courses. How did the people from Argentina, Buenos Aires specifically, react to a Canadian really embracing their culture?
Well, first of all, they wanted to know what a Canadian was doing in Buenos Aires in the first place.
Time to lose the snowshoes.
That's right. And after we got past the igloo and the minus 40-degree weather, we got into the real meat of the situation. No, they embraced the fact that I was learning their language. I did a really intensive course at the University of Buenos Aires. I went every day, every morning. And within 4 months, Mildred, I was speaking pretty well.
I'm very enticed here. You're inviting a group of Canadian women to go to Argentina with you to experience what you did. It's called Argentine Adventure Chin Chin. Tell us about that.
When I was down there, I was talking to people and explore the idea of bringing down a group of fun-loving Canadian women to experience what I did. I absolutely fell in love with the country, and I fell in love with the people. And the more I talked to local people about it, the more they love the idea. So yes, indeed, we're planning a tour of exciting, exotic Buenos Aires, and then we'll be traveling to West Coast Mendoza, the wine valley, which is beautiful.
Now, for the listeners out there, if you are enticed to go to Argentina, Shelley has a travel blog, and we'll be sharing the URL, the website for that, at the end of our time together today. But there's still spots available, I think, Shelley, are there?
Oh, there's a couple of openings that we can put in there, yes.
Oh, that's excellent. Shelley, how has going to Argentina changed your perspective on life? Like, what is important to you now, and what isn't important, and how's that shifted?
I think what shifted the most is that before going to Argentina, I worried about work, advancement in work. I worried about car payments. I worried about house payments. But people are much more laid back in Argentina, much more philosophical.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So they're much less preoccupied with the physical things that we almost take for granted. It's more about family, sharing a meal, and being open with each other.
And how did this help your sense of self and well-being? Sounds like you were truly valued and appreciated for being you, and that was it.
That's exactly what happened. It wasn't what level are you on your career path, size is your house, how many cars do you
mm-hmm.
have.
Mm-hmm.
It was more, Shelley, do you want to go out for dinner? And by my saying yes, it affirmed the friendship between us.
And I imagine you said yes a lot to going out to dinner and had many adventures.
Ooh, at least 4 or 5 times a week.
Oh, my goodness. Who could fit work in? And when you were down there, what were your hurdles? Like, what did you come up against where you said to yourself, I don't know if I can do this, or maybe I'm a little bit hesitant or cautious in this area? Like, where did you shift there?
People take people on face value. They wonder what kinds of things socially you have in common. What kind of music do you like? Where have you traveled? How adventurous are you? So it's more on the level of the spirit of the person.
Shelley, as you were changing in Argentina, what did you find were a couple of the big challenges that you had to overcome?
First of all, it was the reaching out.
Mm-hmm.
Reaching out to friends whenever I needed it and whenever they needed it. I kind of grew up in the family. It was a loving family, but often we wouldn't reach out to each other.
Okay.
To the point that, you know, we'd only answer the telephone. We wouldn't actually reach out and call somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I found that in Argentina, what was happening to me is that because people were reaching out to me so much, it shifted that pattern.
Okay.
And I started calling them, emailing them, text messaging them. And plus, that helped me arrange my social calendar for a week down the road.
When you would first meet someone in Argentina, and maybe this would extend to South America, I know here we say, you know, hi, this is my name, and what do you do, and where are you from? What would that conversation look like there?
They don't fall into that social trap, actually,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
I think they realize that even though a person is something, they may not even enjoy what that is.
Okay.
Yeah. So what happens in Argentina is that I was often asked, so what's a Canadian doing in Argentina? And that was pretty special because I got to give my perspective to them. And I would ask them, you know, what are your top 5 travel destinations in Argentina? Those are things that I was interested in. So we went beyond the standard, what do you do for a living, where do you work, where do you live?
And when people would ask you, what is a Canadian doing in Argentina, what would you say?
I would smile and I would say, estoy viviendo, which means I'm living.
I'm living in Argentina. I love it.
And you know, I think I kept saying it because I love their reaction. They would just smile, twinkle in the eye, because they got it. They
yes.
understood.
Yes. Now that you've been to Argentina, you're back to Canada, what would you like to keep developing? Like how would you keep the momentum moving?
Great question. I think what I discovered down there the most is what I like, what I don't like,
mm-hmm.
what gives me energy. A road trip gives me energy on the weekend. Meeting new people for coffee gives me energy. I want to keep that alive, and I want to keep discovering those things about myself.
Oh.
There's a lot of things that are, I'm sure, deeply hidden still.
And what about for the single gals who are listening? What advice, what sage advice would you have to give to them?
I would say, go down there, open your mind, open your spirit, your body a little. Your body will come along. You'll be well-dressed, accessorized, from head to toe.
Excellent. And then what did you want to develop in terms of your own qualities?
I'm a Libra, Mildred. So that means I have a challenge with balance. if I take on a work-related task, I'm in there head over heels. And often what happens is I forget my friends. I forget working out because I just become so involved in that. So I want to look at who I am and what I'm doing. I want to pull myself back so that there's a bit more balance in my life.
Now, Shelley, before we sign off, is there any words of wisdom or favorite quotes?
I have a couple of quotes, Mildred, and,
okay.
And one of my favorite is, a ship in port is safe, but that's not what ships are built for.
Mm-hmm.
And the other, on a more of a beautiful body level, is, I'd rather be looked over than overlooked.
And this is Mildred Lynn McDonald. Thank you so much for joining us today for Soul Nudge Creates Interviews, and we'll look forward to informing and entertaining you again. Bye for now.
Firefly Willows is excited to announce the Magical Roots of Reiki. Participants in this workshop will explore the esoteric knowledge hidden within Reiki, delve deep into its mystical source, and experience firsthand the power that powers Reiki. Join us July 2012 as we host Jose Figueroa Garcia, Director of Natural Therapies of Oslo, Norway. Jose will lead this workshop on amplifying the power of Reiki by understanding its esoteric roots. Visit fireflywillows.com for more details.
Special guest today is Lynn Thain, who positions herself as a conscious business coach, a writer, and a scientist. Lynn, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mildred, for having me on the show.
When we first met, I was really intrigued by you because you are one of those people who actually had an ah moment. Not only have you had an ah moment, but you chose to harness the energy of that and transform it into something that you could go forward with. Can you tell our listeners a little bit of what happened to you when you were sitting in your class in university and all of a sudden the lights went on? And perhaps you'd like to touch a little bit of your background as a scientist.
The very last class I took at college was called International Rural Development. And it was all about food issues in developing countries. And at this time, I was majoring in molecular and cell biology, so I was very hardcore science. There was very little of the humanities and social science and things like that. So this was one of the first classes I had taken about international issues. And so we learned all about how peasant farmers were being mistreated by big ag companies, and they were given loans that they couldn't repay. They were getting hooked on things like chemical pesticides and fertilizer because the big ag companies would offer it for free at first. The farmer would try it, and then it would work. It would make their crops go bigger and faster, and so they want more of it. But at that point, the companies would start charging for it, and they'd keep raising their prices. So farmers would get into debt.
How did that make you feel? Was it something that you knew about or knew about in the peripheral?
I was quite horrified by everything that I had learned, and I had never really heard about this before, especially in a classroom setting. So it came as quite a shock. I felt really terrible, and I had to question everything I believed up to that point.
And was there a specific example or story that really touched your heart and your mind? Because I'm thinking, other young people are sitting in classes and probably having a similar experience.
I would say it came after that because this was the starting point which opened me up to learning more about sustainability. And it was really reading Michael Pollan's book, The Omnivore's Dilemma, that really turned on a switch for me. In that book, he talks about all the issues of the food system. He believes the solution is that people migrate from cities to farms to take back control of the food system. And it was basically almost like a call to arms for young people to really join the movement in sustainable agriculture. That was the turning on point for me. I felt, oh, hey, maybe there's something I can do here. So I went for it.
Lynn, can you share with our listeners what your worldview was before you started to become educated in this area.
I must have had some vague idea that the way that we were doing things wasn't right. I was aware that factory farming was going on, but I didn't really do the research. I was kind of scared to really go into that area and really research it, and because you know that you're probably going to be horrified by what you find. So I was like most people, I didn't really want to become aware. I wanted to be happy being ignorant.
Yes, I think everybody has been there, and maybe some people still are.
Yeah.
So you're there and you're learning this information. It touches your heart. And then you decide you want to do something with this information to make the world a better place for yourself and for other people. What was that process like?
It was a gradual process. Once that light turned on for me after reading Michael Pollan, I wasn't really in the position where I felt empowered or I didn't have the confidence to really do anything on my own. So I spent a few years just learning as much as I could, reading books, researching online about sustainable policy, sustainable agriculture, and things like that. And eventually when I felt like, oh, I want to really do something, I felt like I needed to live sustainably in order to feel really in alignment with my cause and that calling. And so that's why I started my blog, was to get support for green living.
And your blog is called Upcycled Love. How did you come up with that name?
Oh, it sort of just came to me. I was really interested in upcycling. I thought it was a great idea. And upcycling is basically just taking something that would typically be thrown away. Like if you have a bunch of old clothes, you're either going to throw them away or donate them. But instead of doing that, you take it and use it to make new clothes or use it for some other use. It's upcycling it to become something, a new product to use.
Would buying clothes from a secondhand shop or a vintage clothing shop, would that come under the category of upcycled love? Because I know I do that and I love what I buy.
Yeah, buying from a thrift store or buying vintage, that's definitely upcycled. It's more like reusing because you're not changing the original product at all. But once you make alterations to the original product, that becomes an upcycled product.
I got you. So when I add a little artificial fur trim to my new sweater and make it into a purse, then that would be upcycled.
That would be upcycled.
On your journey, Lynn, were there role models or people who inspired you? Because I imagine as you've walked down the path, you've probably looked not only to get more knowledge or information, but looked for people who were activating what you wanted to activate.
Yeah, I almost want to say everyone inspires me. In the beginning, I wasn't looking for so much inspiration as I was knowledge and confirmation. Now I look for inspiration. So people like Michael Pollan, he's an amazing leader in the movement. Paul Hawken is also an environmental leader. He has written a book called Blessed Unrest, which is very good. And he's written a number of other books too. And my teacher at my last class in college, his name is Eric Holt Jimenez. He has a really great story where he worked for 25 years in Latin America as an agroecologist helping peasant farmers develop sustainable solutions to grow lots of food. And then he came back after 25 years to work in food policy. And he's still very passionate and very hopeful about everything that's going on.
What institution would that be specifically in case someone wanted to look him up?
He teaches at UC Berkeley. And he also is the executive director at Food First, which is based in Oakland in the Bay Area. It's a think tank for developing food policy.
Okay, thank you. And I wanted to share with our listeners the website for your blog, Upcycled Love. Can you share that, please?
Go to upcycledlove.com. That's upcycledlove.com.
I really like the name of that. And I understand that you have an online composting course that you're going to be offering. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that? Because I know that for myself, composting is something I feel like I should be doing it, but I never actually take a real step. So if you could share your philosophy and a little bit about the course, I'm sure people would be interested.
Yeah. So I watched this one video on YouTube about building a backyard compost pile, and it was funny because they said too often people think composting is like rocket science, and they have video footage of space shuttle launching. I think that's how a lot of people feel about it. It's like a big mystery to everyone. Because I learned about the biology of it, I took a compost biology course from a soil scientist. And so I feel like understanding the biology of what's happening in your compost pile can really help you get to know what's going on in there. So then you know why you have to turn it, you know why you have to add water, and you know why there's heat coming from it. That's very motivational, I think, for people to start a compost pile.
Do people name their compost piles?
You can.
Yeah, maybe to personify them or make them human-like, and that might increase the probability of relating to them. I don't know. Just a thought.
And I understand, like, the scary part about composting. You spend all this time building a compost pile or a worm bin, and then you're, like, going along, feeding it, taking care of it, and then it gets kind of tricky because you're afraid that, oh, what if it gets moldy? What if my worms die? And that those types of things really discourage people from continuing to maintain their compost.
Now, if you were going to offer someone one or two hints just to get them started, what would they be?
Let's see.
Other than signing up for your online course.
Yeah, definitely sign up for my course. Don't be afraid to go look at it, to go check on it, even if you have killed worms in the past, if you have screwed up your pile in the past. It never hurts to just go look at it, check on it, and, you know, if you have a question about it, go ask somebody what to do with it. And the one thing that is really important about compost is it's all the microbes in it, the bacteria, fungi, nematodes, all the things you can't see. Those are the things that are decomposing the food. Even in a worm bin, it's still the bacteria and fungi decomposing the food. Mm-hmm. And then it's the worms that eat the bacteria and fungi.
So worms are our friends. Fungi is our friend. We have to learn how to start to look at it like that.
Yeah, they are our allies. They are our friends.
I understand that on your journey, you wrote an e-book. Why did you write that, and who were you hoping to touch with your book?
The e-book is called Living the Transformation. It basically follows my journey of wanting to live green and then finding that I had all these old bad habits ingrained in me that were coming back to take over. They wanted to stay in control. Sort of a combination of practical tutorials on how to make your own natural non-toxic cleaners, how to upcycle, how to compost, and how to live green, basically. Also, sprinkled throughout are some nuggets of inspiration in the form of poetry or some article that focuses on growing confidence and feeling resilience to whatever negativity is coming your way.
So when people are on this journey, and I know many people are waking up to the environment and how it impacts their health and how it impacts the health of their children and their community and whatever, are there any role models that you can share or websites that you can direct people to start off?
One of my favorite role models is Joanna Macy. She has a very wonderful website at joannamacy.net, and she provides also sort of a holistic approach to social change activism. She incorporates a very spiritual message as well as the activism message. Vandana Shiva is also a huge role model of mine. She has an organization called Navdanya, which is connecting farmers and people to the earth. And she also has combined science, spirituality, and philosophy together for empowering people.
Lynn, would you be able to put a list of resources or favorite links together if you just post that on the Firefly Willows Live website?
Yeah, sure, no problem.
Because I know that people check that out after the show, so that would be wonderful. I'm sure as you went on this journey, you had feelings about the state of the world and healing and lots of thoughts like that. What type of messages did you give to yourself so that you felt hopeful and you were able to transfer this hope to people who maybe read your blog or read your book or even people who are entertaining the idea of taking your composting course?
One really important thing is that no one person is going to save the world. It's going to take a whole lot of people, maybe not everybody, maybe like 5 or 10% of the population to do something about it. So you can be a part of that 5 or 10%. You don't have to be Dr. King or something like that. You don't have to be the one superhero of the world. And it's also important to remember that the outcome ultimately, because it depends on a group vision, that the outcome is not your responsibility. So it's important to just focus on what it is that you do want to create and just sort of let go of fears and doubts and being overwhelmed and just focusing on the little piece that you're working on.
That's excellent guidance. You're out there on the front line. You're interacting with people. What messages are they sharing?
People have written to me. They're very inspired by my work and they want to live sustainably. I know that a lot of people have trouble with it, and so they really like that I'm spreading this message and going forward with it.
And what gives you a sense of fulfillment?
Oh, I feel fulfilled when I am in a good mood. Being fulfilled is also being on purpose, doing something meaningful, feeling connected to a larger purpose that other people share.
With your background in science, has that helped you as you've moved forward in the eco or green area? How have you been able to tap into that and use it?
While I was working in biochemistry, I had access to PubMed articles and all sorts of research databases. So I could access a lot of articles, research articles that most people couldn't. That allowed me to do more research than the average person could.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say I was an expert necessarily, but is definitely more aware than most people. And also because I had an understanding of science, so I could see whether a study was done not well or if it was done well. And one thing to look for if you're trying to do research on your own is to see if the author of the study is tied to any other organizations that may be influencing their work.
Oh, I understand. Stakeholders.
Yeah, stakeholders.
That may color.
Now,
are you planning to write anything about the scientific approach to eco or green living in terms of what you've just shared now? When people are reviewing studies or reviewing data in general, make sure that there's not, how can I say this nicely? Maybe you want to say it nicely for me.
No ulterior motives.
No ulterior motives that might be coloring anything in any respect. It seems to me that you would probably be in a unique position to put 10 tips or some guidelines together for the average person.
Yeah, sure. I could definitely do that.
I think we might have just come up with something here. Lynn, is there a big demand for the type of service that you're offering? What I'm really getting to is if someone wanted to work with you on becoming more green or exploring their world and how they can improve it, how would they go about doing such a thing?
Well, I offer a variety of coaching services, and I'm open to working with people on whatever they want to that fits in with what I'm offering. And what I offer is anything from conscious business, which is really just developing an online presence so you can start selling your services or products, you know, an authentic sort of heart-centered marketing plan. I also do copywriting and branding work and a little bit of graphic design. And I also have sustainability coaching. So if you're looking to start living green or if you want more resources, guidance on living green and how that impacts your health and how you can save money by living green, things like that, I also offer that coaching as well.
And what do people seem to be most interested in?
Honestly, most people are interested in the business and marketing aspect.
Really?
Yeah, I think it's hard for people to feel like they should spend money on a green living coach because they feel like maybe the information is all freely available online. The good thing about a coach is that you get emotional support and someone who can filter through all that information online and point you in the right directions to the sources that are credible and reliable.
So, Lynn, could you share one more time your website just in case someone would like to get a hold of you?
My website is at upcycledlove.com. That's UPCYCLEDLOVE.com. And there's a link to my contact page on there, so you can feel free to email me through that contact page.
Oh, that's excellent. Lynn, thank you so much for joining us today. I loved talking to you, and I have to say, your balance between the science, the heart, and the eco-awareness is such a beautiful combination. I know that many people will want to get a hold of you just to perhaps even have you on their contact list. And I would love to invite you to come back again once you've launched your composting course, have delivered it, and receive feedback from people. Because I'm really curious. I'm sure there's going to be a few good stories in there. Would that be something you're open to?
Yeah, definitely.
I hope that you enjoyed the interview with conscious business coach, writer, and scientist, Lynn Fang. Please be sure to go to our website for tips, hints, and resources that Lynn mentioned during our time together. This is your host, Mildred Lynn McDonald. Please stay tuned for What's Your Prescription for Balance with naturopathic doctor Glenna Calder. If you're looking to better understand how stress impacts your health and what you can do about it, then this is the segment for you. Stay tuned. Welcome back. Today, we'll continue with part two of the popular What's Your Prescription for Balance interview with East Coast naturopathic doctor, Glenna Calder. Let's join the conversation as Glenna shares with us her insights and observations regarding the health impact of stress and, most importantly, what we can do to change it. Hope you enjoy the conversation.
I think we've given the word stress, you know, a bad rap, really, because stress can still be positive, but it's still hard on us. So there's good stress, there's bad stress.
So can you give an example?
Sure. You take somebody that works 80 to 90 hours a week.
Mm-hmm.
They love their job, and everything's positive about their job, but their health is breaking down. For example, their marriage is breaking down. Maybe there's somebody, they're an athlete, and they're not performing as well, and they're frustrated because they want to continue this high-paced job. But they have to compromise. You can't have everything. You can't go at 70 or 80 hours, even if you love your job, and expect to have great sleep, a great family life, and all of these other things, because something's going to sacrifice, or you have to sacrifice something. So somebody, for example, that works 70 hours a week and loves their job, that's a wonderful thing. But the body can't perform 75 hours a week, year after year after year, without something or their health being compromised, because we're made to be in fight or flight for a certain amount of time. But we're, as long as we're balancing that out with being in repair mode, relaxation mode, we can continue. But when you look at what 70 hours a week that breaks down to, you're not spending much awake time out of fight or flight. So there's not a lot of time to heal and repair for the next 14-hour day.
I know someone who works in high tech, which is a demanding job with lots of adrenaline flowing. It's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And they were finding that after years and years and years of this, although they loved their job, they were experiencing symptoms of burnout.
Mm-hmm.
What they chose to do to help alleviate that is to take up something creative so they could engage another part of their brain or another part of their being, and it turned out to be gardening. Something that's readily available to everybody. What started to happen is that as their interest and benefits from gardening, I guess the connection with nature started to grow, their desire to spend so many hours in the high-tech arena started to decrease. Because they started to really like the feelings that they would obtain from the garden. And I feel that over a period of maybe a year, through this back and forth, or maybe yin and yang, they did find the balance.
That's a great example, because often when people do go into something creative, it's involving nature or colors. you know, the things that we've talked about, what effect those have on the body. Things like nature, sounds, and color have such a nice healing response in the body that it's not a surprise that that person noticed how much better they felt.
And the other key component that I've noticed with this particular person, who is a great example, is they did not judge themselves. So when they decided to give themselves a gift of a garden, which is creative, they didn't put it in a place or make it mean that I'm taking away time from my high-tech career. And when they were working in high-tech, they didn't make it mean I'm taking precious time away from gardening. And I found that that was a key pivot point for that person internally. They didn't judge themselves. They didn't judge the activity. They let it evolve naturally.
So what they really did is, as you taught me, follow your heart.
Yes. And what I noticed from my practice talking with people and listening to what they have to say and observing, if you can get yourself to the point where everything means nothing and nothing means everything, which is basically not judging, then you are an open slate. And you're almost at that point where you're at in the practice where people have that ah moment and they get it.
Another part of that is, like you said, open slate, there's no expectations there, so there's less pressure we put on ourselves.
Yeah, which feeds into the permission that you were talking about earlier. And from my practice, I found the most compelling, the most profound coaching session or inner work personal development session is when a person gives themselves permission to accept and be who they are. And from that point, I imagine you would find this in your practice, any structural information that you share with them or behavior modification or whatever, rewiring, you know, for positive life force energy becomes a breeze.
Definitely. And I can see it definitely in my practice because they're letting go.
Yes. So
they're less, the resistance comes down. And really what they're doing is saving themselves a lot of time and energy and effort.
This is all well and fine, but people are saying, I'm just too busy. And by putting a new pattern in place, I just don't have the time for it. So they're in so deep that they look at even a healing opportunity as one more thing on their list. And if you're dealing with a person like that, what have you found gets their time and attention?
Unfortunately, there's a group of people that need to have lost something, whether it's their health or a job or something like that, because they really are having a hard time prioritizing themselves and their health and their happiness, whatever you want to call it. There's something that will wake us up, and sometimes it's drastic with their health.
Okay.
You know, maybe they end up in the emergency room because of an episode with their heart, and that's life-changing. Some people, they say it's one of the best things they've ever had happen to them is a diagnosis of cancer. They started to take every day and realize what an opportunity it was. So it can be that extreme. Sometimes it's a matter of having somebody in their life really tell them, I'm missing you, you're not who you used to be, you're not happy anymore. Things like that can be a wake-up call for us. A check-in to go, am I happy? Am I doing what I love? To ask those questions to ourselves. And that sometimes we need to see somebody, a professional, set aside that hour to go, am I happy? Is this where I want to be? Where do I want to be in 5 or 10 years? Or how did I get to this place where I'm at?
I find when I'm talking with people and they're sharing information that you're talking about now, people don't really know what questions to ask themselves. And if they're in a situation with a trained listener who's respectful of their space, and the listener is also gifted or skilled in their ability to ask profound questions, questions that come from the heart or appeal to the spirit, usually the person can answer them quite easily because you're bypassing the head.
Right.
And I believe that's exactly what you're talking about now. And so I'd have to say in my practice, what I found is with most people, they know something's wrong. They know they need to make a change. They don't know the process to be able to access what's inside of them to help them make that change by asking compelling or profound or even common sense questions, listening to what they're saying, and you can reflect it back to them and say, well, this is what you're saying. Have you ever thought about it this way? So you're offering them another perspective. And I know that in your practice, you're very gifted at that. You're an excellent listener. You have excellent
as a naturopathic doctor, intake forms so you can gather information. And when the person feels that you're actually listening to them and hearing what they have to say from their heart, you're able to take that information and synthesize it and present it back to them in a way that they can go, oh, right, that's exactly it. But I didn't know that was exactly it until you told me that. Have you found that?
That's a great point, because when I'm reflecting on my experience in a consultation with somebody, that moment can change the outcome of the next 6 months of their health if they have that moment. And if they feel listened to, they relax. They're not, I guess, fighting against something, because when we don't feel listened to, we're stressed. Whereas when we feel listened to, we can relax because someone's hearing us.
And if we don't feel listened to, then we're wearing a mask.
Exactly.
Because it's not safe to show up as you really are, and a mask is exhausting. So I imagine in your practice, when you're talking to one of your patients, you can almost see or feel when that mask starts to dissolve, that
Definitely.
Moment. Yeah. And how, when that happens, is there any characteristics that you notice about the person or even yourself?
Interesting. I do notice it's almost like less has to be said, because once somebody feels listened to, they go right to that important part of their thought. Whereas we don't feel listened to, we tend to kind of go everywhere around trying to get maybe attention or whatever it is. But when someone feels listened to, it's much more efficient.
I love what you're saying about it's almost as if less has to be said, because I wonder if the communication channels start to open on different levels.
I think you're right. And when that happens, you see they resist changing their lifestyle too.
So when people are opening up on different channels, what you're finding is that when you're suggesting them the lifestyle modifications, they're more open to accepting them.
Right, and I think it's because then everything gets connected.
Okay.
They've been able to find in within themselves what was important to them because they feel listened to. So they relax, they find out what they really want to change in their life, and they want to make the change to get there. They first have to identify what is it that I'm not happy about, or what is it that my body's trying to tell me.
Glenna, I found one of the most powerful questions you asked me once. I remember it was the month of November, and it was in Toronto, and we were having a nice cup of tea, Cape Breton style, together, and you asked me, are you friends with your body? It took me back, but I thought, she's good. So I'm wondering, in the context of what you were just sharing, is it that the body now feels listened to also?
Yes, like our mind, when the body's listened to or the mind is listened to, there's less of a fight. Just like we can describe it ourselves, if we feel like someone closer is listening to us, mm-hmm. we'll surrender, relax. There's no reason to be in that fight or flight mode anymore because our brain is saying, oh, it's safe and all is well.
And when you're talking to a person in this area and listening, do you notice that their body language changes?
Yes. You know, you can see their shoulders come down,
mm-hmm.
you know, which is the biggest thing. You can see their, if they've had their fist tightened, you can see it relax.
Do you notice that the hand is folded over their third chakra or their stomach area? Did you notice that releases?
Oh, definitely.
That's the sign I always look for.
Definitely.
Glenna, I just absolutely loved our conversation, and I hope that you will entertain the idea of coming back again, because I know our listeners would love to hear from you.
I would definitely like to come back, Mildred, and thank you again for this opportunity.
This is Mildred Lynn McDonald. Thank you for listening to our show today. I hope that you'll join us for the next episode of Healing Conversations on Sunday, May 6th at 10:30 a.m. Pacific Time. Also, please be sure to visit the website for tips and hints and resources from our guests. And for those who love giving feedback, please complete our easy breezy 5-minute online survey. Enjoy the day.
To learn more about today's guests or one of the topics discussed, go to fireflywillows.com/live. And for more information about Firefly Willows LIVE upcoming shows, visit our page at blogtalkradio.com/fireflywillowsLIVE.
Thank you for joining us on today's episode of Firefly Willows LIVE. We hope you enjoyed the show. Please join us next week when John Carosella hosts Convergence. John will be speaking with Ana Maria Sanchez, a girl from the hood gone good. Join us as Ana Maria talks about her book and her journey from abuse and addiction to self-love and profound healing. We'll also hear about overcoming resistance, finding resources in very unexpected places, and exploring reality under another full moon. That and more next week on Firefly Willows LIVE, Blog Talk Radio.